This past weekend, it was announced that Mad Magazine was scaling back, eliminating the magazine from the newsstand, and distributing only to current subscribers. There's going to be new covers, but the content inside will be archival. This sent shockwaves through the comedy world as many prominent actors, writers, and comedians bemoaned the loss of the iconic magazine. Mad was started as a comic book back in 1952, and it never looked back. It rebooted back in 2017 when it moved from New York to L.A. Mad Magazine was considered the Bible for many teenagers throughout the last 60-some-odd years. It made fun of everything, poked fun at those in power, and parodied movie and television. I read this quote from the New York Times Magazine. They had done a story on the 25th anniversary of Mad back in 1977. Here's a quote. Month after month and issue after issue, in a relentlessly good-natured way, Mad told us everything was askew. That there were lies in advertising, that other comic books lied, that television and movies lied, and that adults in general, when faced with the unknown, lied. Daryl Jevons is the entertainment editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, grew up with Mad Magazine, wrote a great story about it this weekend. He's in studio now. Great to see you, Daryl.
Good evening.
So this is, how much of a surprise was it to read this first off, before you put this together, pretty much from knowledge, you could tell from the piece that you were not culling through stories. This is from your love of Mad Magazine, but how surprised were you to read this?
Well, don't forget, you're talking to a guy who works in the print media, so.
It's not that surprising, right?
This stuff does not surprise me anymore, no.
It's for you.
But it had been kind of a long, slow withering of Mad, and this reboot they did a couple years ago sort of reeked of desperation. It was a Hail Mary, and it clearly didn't work.
Yeah, they started back at one. That was the idea, that they were going to do episode number one or issue number one.
Yeah, it wasn't nearly the same as it had been back in the day. And of course, there's way too much competition for that kind of audience now.
The line that, or the quote that I read from New York Times Magazine about, you know, telling us everything was askew, that everybody was lying, that really was what their premium, that was their content back in the day.
That was the core of the magazine. It was the theme. And it's what you want to hear at a certain age. Once you've spent the first decade of your life or so listening to mom and dad and believing it all, believing what the teachers tell you, believing what the commercials tell you, it's so refreshing at that age, at least in our era, to learn that there's a lot of garbage and you're being fed a lot of misinformation and to be told in such a funny way.
Yeah, there is something that, I wonder when you think about the heyday of the 70s and 80s, and really the 60s were big for Mad as well, but, you know, it was the 70s and 80s and the teenagers coming up. That was the Bible for any boy that is coming up in age 13 to 15. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that, beyond the fact that you were just being told that everyone is lying, what was the attraction to you?
I think it was unique. It was a vision that I did not see anywhere. You'd see it a little bit in sitcoms, you'd see it a little bit, you didn't really see it in the late night talk shows either. Johnny Carson was pretty much following the straight line of the establishment. You'd see it with like the Smothers Brothers, maybe you'd see it with Monty Python. But it was unusual, and that was the day when you had to track that stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
So to see everything mocked so aggressively and so incisively at that age was just, it was overpowering.
One of the things I loved about the piece you did for the Sun-Times is that you can tell that your love and passion for Mad, but you also named all the writers and all the creators that were in the heyday. That was amazing to me, because I was not the kind of reader at that time that really cared about who were writing these things, but you seemed to know exactly what every single writer was doing for the magazine.
The magazine had a set attitude, which I guess, at the risk of stereotyping, I could call it, you know, sort of a smart aleck New York Jew thing, which to me as a kid in Wisconsin was, you know, from outer space and super exciting. But they allowed in a lot of diversity as far as the look of the magazine and the layouts of the magazine. So you had artists who did, you know, very simple, like line drawing kind of stuff. Then you had people who did really comprehensive, like crowd scenes, mm-hmm. and details in every little speck of the page. And so as you were turning the pages, you'd see this kind of style and then that kind of style. And then if you do it enough, if you're a nerd with no life who reads it compulsively, not that I know anyone like that, you would get to know the distinctive styles after a while.
Something about the magazine also, you know, it was a first time for a younger generation where it wasn't just making fun of pop culture around us, but it was making fun of politics. There was a lot in there that you know, would make fun of whoever the current president was or what was happening in the news when it comes to a certain Senate debate or something like that. But it definitely brought to life politics for people of a young age.
Oh, it was practically a textbook for me. You know, when I got deep enough into it and I started looking for back issues, which you could find at garage sales and mail order and stuff, it became a history lesson, too. I could read about, you know, I was a child in 67, 68, but I could read these, and some of the stuff I'd get, and some of the stuff I didn't, and I really wanted to get. So then I go to the old World Book Encyclopedia and rummage around and got to know who is Barry Goldwater and who is Timothy Leary. So it motivated a hunger to learn.
Yeah. Darrell Jevons is here. He's the entertainment editor for the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking about Mad Magazine. If you got any thoughts on the magazine essentially ceasing publication, that's not the right way to say it. What would you say?
I said scaled back.
Scaling
in my
back and changing the way they do production. Give us a ring, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break, come back with Darrell, and we'll continue the conversation about Mad Magazine here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Mad Magazine here on 720 WGN, Extension 720. I'm Justin Kaufman. Darrell Jevons is here, an entertainment editor, Chicago Sun-Times, wrote about the move by the magazine to scale back and to present new covers with archival material and only do direct to subscribers. They're done with the newsstand. They're done with new material. They said they may do annual magazines in some form, best of the year, that kind of thing. Darrell, the covers, obviously, as we talk about Alfred E. Newman, that they're so iconic, and they're almost, as you think about the other magazines of different generations, Playboy and others, where everything you can, it's whatever's on the cover. Mad Magazine is the same way.
It was part of that newsstand culture where you had to catch the eye of the shopper, and so they went to probably more than anyone else in magazine business. They went to these extreme lengths to look different. So they had covers that were almost blank. They had they did a crazy stunt in 1960. You know, they had to print weeks before they'd hit the stands. So they knew they were going to come out right around the election time. So they printed a Congratulations Richard Nixon cover. And then you flipped it over, and the other side was a Congratulations JFK cover. And they told the newsstand guys, just put the one out that reflects the winner. And they looked so wise and prescient with that.
There seems to be an art form when it comes to grabbing the attention of a consumer at a newsstand. You don't see it as much anymore, but you know, this they created this character, Alfred E. Newman, and he became the face of Mad Magazine in a way that they probably didn't even expect.
The funny thing is they didn't create it, they stole it. It was a little face that had been knocking around like in advertising for decades before that. And somebody found it one day and just pasted it into a layout, and they liked it, and they kept using it and using it. And they would give him different names. They called him Melvin Kozlowski and different things. And then meanwhile, they would often use Alfred E. Newman as a silly name for a character. So one day they had the genius idea to connect these two, and then he became the mascot. They used him on most of the covers, not all of them, and they would, of course, transform him into the pop culture figure of the moment. So he, mm-hmm. you know, he would turn into Lawrence of Arabia, or he'd turn into a Planet of the Ape, or all that kind of stuff.
It was funny, just recently, I think it was not too long ago, that President Trump tweeted out an insult to one of his Democratic candidates, to Mayor Buttigieg out of South Bend. He called him Alfred E. Newman. I think he said something where he said, we don't want this Alfred E. Newman guy to be president, or something like that. And then Buttigieg's response, which was hilarious.
I don't know who that is.
He said, I had to Google it. And it makes you think about, when you say that, you're like, come on. But then you're like, you know what? I don't know if newer, he's in his 30s, but, you know, I'm not sure how many generations maybe beyond mine, or maybe the one right after, is familiar or as religious about Mad Magazine.
Right. You the last decade or so, you had definitely had to seek it out. It wasn't going to fall in your lap like it did for us. back then.
Yeah. I think about that because it was so important. And when you think about what we've been talking about, you can almost draw a direct line to a lot of the programs that now are the winning comedy programs or winning comedy publications in our culture. They all stem from what Mad Magazine was doing.
They have to. And, you know, the people in charge of those shows now, I think, are of that generation, or at least, or maybe younger, but a lot of them came from that generation, our generation, that knew Mad well. One of the books they put out, like a historical book, they looked for celebrity endorsements, and they put the feelers out with several known famous fans of the magazine to say, let's get somebody, maybe somebody reply and write for this issue, for this book. And they got something like 20 replies. Everybody wanted in. So they had an essay from Roseanne, and they had an essay from Judd Apatow, and they had an essay from Tony Hawk. It's just like people from all over the place, anybody who had sort of a smart-ass point of view.
Yeah,
learned that from me.
And it's not a stretch to say that smart-ass point of view birthed Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
You can go even further. You can say Stephen Colbert and The Daily Show and all of the sort of mocking programming that has come out of this generation owes a debt to what Mad Magazine did before.
If they didn't learn it from Mad, they learned it from someone else who learned it from Mad.
Right. Mad TV came on in the 90s, and that was something that was moderately successful, tried to take on what SNL was doing at the time. And then there was another Cartoon Network show, Mad. There was other things that Mad, an off-Broadway show, but it seemed like they tried to get, they took their popularity and they took it outside of the magazine.
Yeah, they were very good at going out there with, you know, building the brand everywhere. For a while in the 60s, there was a Broadway show where they sang songs from the magazine and did bits from the magazine, which was pretty successful. And it was the launching pad, I believe, for Joanne Worley. So we also have that to credit Mad for.
Okay. It's always good.
And then they did all these, you know, they took their material and they made it into paperback books. They made it into, you know, jumbo size issues that came out later, and just kept it going.
If this is the end of Mad, meaning they the next shoe drops and they say, we just don't have the money for anything beyond, you know, just the masthead or the Alfred E. Newman logo, what will be their legacy? I mean, will you look back and say this is one of the sort of comedic champions of our time?
Oh, for sure. And beyond the influential stuff we talked about, there's a body of work that's really powerful, and that's why they keep repackaging it in books and things. You can sit and read about the politics of a certain era, the TVs and movies of a certain era, the music, the culture. Just the family culture, the education culture of those ages, and get, you know, not just a history book take on it. You're going to get an opinionated take on it, and it's going to be fun too.
A whole conversation without Spy versus Spy. How about that? We did that, of course, or The Fold.
The Fold-In.
Yeah, The Fold-In was so great.
Ruined many newsstand issues with The Fold-In.
Daryl Jevons, entertainment editor over at the Chicago Sun-Times. Read his piece. It was just published, I think it was on Friday. Great piece. And
Thursday.
It was Thursday. And thank you so much for coming in and talking about Mad Magazine. Appreciate it, bud.
My pleasure.